Hello, welcome back to Taboo. My name's Katrina. Today I'm joined by Ellie and Ben. Ellie, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yes, I've been here before. Ellie Corman, Chief Investment Officer and Head of Development Finance at Tab.
Ben, special guest.
Hi, I'm Ben. I'm Director at Norton Mayfield Architects.
So today's episode is going to be on architecture, what it is, what you need to know about it, when you need an architect, and all the wonderful things that surround architecture. If I kick things off with question number one, which, what is an architect?
Oh, that depends on who's asking the question. The architect's the guy who sorts a building out for you or with you, and is part of a team. If you're a domestic client, it might be the person that comes around and helps you out with your extension. You might also do an office block. Architects span a wide range of stuff, and we specialise naturally through the sort of stuff that our practice gets in. The architect can help you out with the locks on your doors.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
We get asked. The architect becomes, I don't know, client confidant as well through the process. They're an interface between a client and a wider building team through the design process, but then into construction. I mean, how does a client translate what they really want to see to someone who's putting it together? Well, it's through drawings, and when the drawings don't cover everything, you need someone else to interpret, you know, describe, enlighten someone. So to a contractor, I can be the person they don't like to see. So I'm the person that turns up and goes, I'm not sure that's right, good enough. Can you change that? Or delivering the news that a client wants to make a change. No one wants to see things changed when you're halfway through the work. So, yeah, bit of everything.
Yeah.
You kind of have to know a bit of everything. But, yeah, principally, what do? We design architecture. We draw architecture. We produce architecture, architecture in its many forms. That's what we do.
So whether I'm a homeowner looking to do home improvements and extensions, or whether I'm a developer looking to design something, you'll get involved from the beginning of the conversations and have liaise with me and all the other professionals around me to help me get from what I want to do to actually achieving that from a drawing's perspective.
Yeah, principally, but the question every architect will ask you as a client first off is, do you need an architect? I mean, it sounds a little weird, but it's true. We're a profession that offers a great deal of value to a project, but you know, maybe there's a good contractor that you just need to solve a problem. Yeah, we're not always brought in at the start of a job. Yeah, people get into stuff and then suddenly realise that there's a hole in their knowledge, or maybe they're being advised that they could do with a bit more information. Yeah. Principally, you tend to get your architect in early if you need one. Yeah. You tend to ask the architect to help build up a team around them for you as a client. You might have people you already know to build into that team, but let the architect bring them together and coordinate them. And ultimately, the architect works as, in RABA speak, Royal Institute of British Architects speak, as lead designer, yeah, with an overall responsibility, so to deliver the client's mm-hmm. wishes through the rest of the team.
And what, so you kind of touched on building the team around it and everything like that. At what point would I know whether or not I need an architect? What kind of projects would that be? Like if I'm building a shed, obviously I'm presuming I don't need an architect, but if it's a big shed, a warehouse, would that be obvious? I mean,
there's a really easy answer to that is go and ask an architect if you need an architect.
And they'll
we're not unapproachable. Yeah. And we'll give you a straight answer. Yeah. Obviously, the line I will take is an architect is always going to add value.
Yeah.
Yeah, in one way or another. Yeah. But it's whether that in the particular iteration is absolutely necessary. Do you need an architect to come in and tell you to change how to change a door or to change a lock? No, you don't.
Yeah.
Yeah. But do you need an architect to tell you what the door performance should be if you're doing a loft conversion or altering a office arrangement? What are the regulations about that door? What do you need to think about? Your architect can do that for you and might just save a problem further down the line when someone goes, not happy with that. Yeah. So ask the question. every architect to be polite.
Yeah.
You'd like to think the worst you can get is a bit of free advice and you'll learn something.
So on that, then, what is the kind of most, the smallest project you've been asked to do that someone, that you have said, you really don't need me for this?
Oh, we do get asked about sheds. That's an interesting one.
Yeah?
Yeah. About, often people approach us initially because they've heard that they might need a planning permission for something. Yeah, so some form of regulatory approval. And there's parts of the planning legislation that means you can do a thing without a certain permission. Yeah, and so quite often a project may rise and fall very quickly because they want to install a product. Yes? Take something like an air conditioning, external air conditioning unit.
Yeah? Sure.
What is it? Where is it? Where is it going to be positioned? Are all questions to ask. How much noise does it make? Yeah.
Yeah.
Where are you in the country? The answer might not be, you know, just ask your installer to deal with the approvals.
So they were kind of, a lot of the solutions.
But if you rang your architect up and said, this is what I'm doing, and I happen to be on a listed building in a conservation area overlooked by a load of expensive properties at the rear, you might just want to have a little bit more comfort. You might just want to have some form of approval, perhaps from the council, just to say, what you're doing is appropriate, legitimate, and inevitably that means a drawing.
Mm-hmm.
And inevitably the installer's not going to do a plan of where the house is. So this is where you might get an architect in. There are other members of the wider profession, architectural designers, architectural technologists, that can do a certain amount of these services. They are not as extensively trained as an architect, but can provide drawing services as well. So, again, an architect, if you rang an architect, and if they were being polite and happy to talk to you, they'd probably give you a good piece of advice.
Well, good to know. I'm going to go on to question two, which is, what is the process to designing a building? Oh. Let's say that we're taking a building in this circumstance, a normal building.
Okay. I'm going to twist the question slightly because we do a lot of work in London. Okay, the opportunity for building new in London is fairly limited. A lot of London's already been built over. Yeah, so a lot of our work at the moment is finding new use for buildings, reusing existing buildings, mm-hmm. extending existing buildings. So what's involved? Well, first, we've got to learn the building. Yeah, so whether that's by, for a small domestic stuff, we'd survey it ourselves, someone else would survey it if it's a larger commercial project, perhaps. We'd understand how the existing building is built, how it stands up, what elements of that building we might want to retain, what elements need to be come out, whether it's for practical purposes or because there's something wrong with it, for example. But at the same time, we need to be listening to the client about what they want. So we're learning the building, we're listening to the client.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We advise the client on how to meet those criteria, or perhaps we can't meet the client's expectations. You know, if it's 1,500 square metres, they want 2,000 square metres and the site isn't big enough, you know, the conversation has to be had about how we fit them in without extending, for example. We'd take those criteria away, as well as other criteria, you know, where's the sunlight coming from, where's the noise coming from, what issues have we got to do with parking, transport, what are the neighbours, is there any sensitive uses, what's below us, what's above us, all of those things. And we develop what we would call a feasibility. So we represent to the client, this is what we think is feasible given your criteria, given the context. If that's still working for the client, mm-hmm. we might then take that on to a next stage, which we would describe as a concept stage. That's the first time we perhaps start showing a client something that starts to look like a building. Feasibility, we might show them some blocky sort of arrangements, but we might start showing something that starts to look like a building. How we arrange the elements that they want within their building mm-hmm. in a space, only loosely, because it's important that the client feeds back to us throughout the whole process. You know, we've not got a crystal ball. We don't come up with the right answer first time around. We'd like to make things
has
easier.
Has that happened?
Yeah. again, back to the client.
Yeah.
If we've got a commercial client that's got a commercial brief that is merely interested in seeing development move forward, the answer is quite often what we offer.
Yeah.
Yes? Okay. Because there are rules about what we do. If we're a domestic client...
Like this scenario.
yeah. First time round, we will have met the client's requirements as best we can.
Yeah. Yes?
we'll never get everything in. Well, we can get everything in, but ordinarily there's a compromise. Sometimes the compromise is cost. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's client budget. And so there ends being a bit of a process sitting with the client and going through pros and cons, essentially.
Yeah.
You can have this, but you can't have that. You know, you could do this, but maybe that doesn't work if you do that. Sometimes we have to go back to the client and say their brief we'd like to tweak.
Yeah.
You know, it isn't going to work, but hey, look, we thought of how we can do this over here that might just be work out for you. What do you think of that? And it's really nice to put up in front of a client a set of options and just watch their eyebrows rise and fall. You can kind of, it's nice to do it in person. I mean, days of Zoom calls are all right, but nice to do it in person. Papers on the table, yeah. Pens on the desk. Watch their faces.
Does that come because a client has a vision in their mind of what they want? Let's say it's their own home. They have a vision in their mind of what they want their home to look like in terms of space, but don't consider everything because they're not drawing it out. And once you start drawing it out for them, even if it's blockwork drawing rather than detail drawings,
yeah.
You're opening their eyes to something that they've never considered.
We meet clients with no expectations, no idea, and we meet clients that have drawn it themselves already.
Mm.
Yeah, any end of the spectrum. The no idea guys sometimes are more the difficult to please. It's the looser brief, mm-hmm. Yeah. There's less criteria. You know, we then put stuff up and they go, oh no, actually, never liked that. Admittedly, it's as a job at that feasibility stage to tease out. I said building site or site, yeah. I suppose, and client brief. It's our job to tease that brief out. Do you like this sort of thing? What do you think about that? Could we do this? That sort of conversation.
Yeah.
We ask open-ended, broad questions to get a client to talk to us. Yeah. But equally, they're directed. They're for mm-hmm. a purpose. They're for a reason. We're trying to build a brief. Even if the client hasn't got a brief that they can write down, we can write down a brief for them. It's important on every stage of work that we look at what the client's brief is. We report back to the client about how we're meeting that brief. We update that brief for them. Yes?
Yeah.
Yeah, we have agreed to do a thing. Yeah.
So once you've gone from feasibility to kind of concept,
yeah.
Then your client's happy with
that's the
concept.
Thing. Yeah, we have to get a client happy. That's what we always like to have a client happy. If we can get a client, if we can go and get a client to sign off on concept, then a whole lot of work streams then open up.
Yeah.
Yeah. We work into something that's more of a developed design, and this is where the first set of regulatory matters will start to surface. A good architect is always thinking about how the building will stand up, how it will meet building regulations, how it will get approval from the local planning authority. Yes, for example.
Mm-hmm.
They may willfully ignore the local planning authority until such a point where, because you're trying to meet the client's brief, and you never know until you start talking to the local planners about what's going to happen. But once you've got that sort of more developed design, then it's time to start drawing stuff that will get shown to other people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is when you are going out to perhaps there are other parties involved, perhaps there's other people that are investing, perhaps there's neighbours. Yeah, perhaps you need planning permission. Yeah, perhaps you need permission from a landlord. Yeah, this set of drawings ain't necessarily the prettiest set of drawings. Yeah, but they paint a picture for someone who's used to the process, yeah, to read.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we quite often say to clients, it's certainly that concept stage, we're doing stuff in three dimensions, in colour, we're showing them views, we're talking about where the daylight comes in, where the sunlight's coming from, what the view to the garden's like. And quite often we get slightly strange looks when the next set of drawings we do, which are going out to a planning authority, are suddenly turned black and white and flat and 2D and boring. Them's is the rules.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have to submit the drawings in that format. And this is where your architect is really going to take off from just helping you conceive a project in helping you get a project moving rapidly forward. People can do the envelope sketches and work out what they want, but is the layperson capable of filling out the forms for the planning authority, negotiating with the planning authority, negotiating with landlords, dealing with initial conversation with builders. Certainly with domestic projects, it's a good time to start to engage with someone who might build mm-hmm. it for you. because you want them to be as interested in it as you are interested in it. So, and sometimes this is where things kind of die. Yeah. We'd always try and meet the client's brief.
Yeah.
We'd always advise the client where we can't make a brief. If we can't meet a brief because it's regulatory, we'll have to explain so. Yeah. If we can't meet a brief because the planning authority have a policy that says you might not get away with that, we might agree with the client to at least ask. Yeah. Planning policy is guidance. It is not the law. Yeah. Every site is different. Every building is an individual. Don't ask me to push it on stuff that has been repeated in the street already. You can kind of see where it's going. But we might be doing, we've had some surprises in our time. We changed police stations into flats in our time. Yeah. We've kept beautiful listed buildings and changed their use so they run on for another 100, 150 years in a new guise. Mm-hmm. It's really cool. But if someone comes to me and says, yeah, I'd like to take down this bungalow and put a 10-story tower block on it, I might just say, yeah, we'll happily draw it for you. But you might not go much further than that. So the, your architect is your confidant in that yeah. respect. Yeah. And sometimes we're open and honest. We might tell a client, look, what you're after ain't going to work. Yeah, that's the briefing stage. But we might then go, but I can see what you could do instead.
Yeah. So feasibility, concept.
Develop design.
Right.
Approvals. Yeah, after that, you have the opportunity to wave your architect goodbye.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, so up but beyond...
You could do.
Well, we
you
won't in this scenario.
In this context, you won't. yeah. You'd be advised to carry on with them, of course. Yeah.
So,
you could reach out if you're doing a shed out in a retail park, mm-hmm. or a commercial. You might just go straight off to a contractor who's good at delivering sheds.
So, that developed design would cover all of the structural drawings.
That level will just do enough for that. Regulatory approval.
Yeah.
Sorry, not full regulatory approval, some of the regulatory approval. It'll start the project going. Yes?
Yeah.
It'll start the project going through its regulatory things. It'll get to planning. Yeah. It won't get you a set of drawings that without additional information you could build from.
Okay.
But that additional information doesn't necessarily come from your architect. Yeah?
Right.
Okay. If you're a homeowner,
yep.
and you live in a house, not a flat, and you have a garden, you've certain rights to build certain things in your garden without planning permission. Yeah, certain other things need planning permission. This is where you talk to your architect to find out. Even if they don't need planning permission, you might want the comfort that the local authority knows, and you could make an application for a particular form of not permission, but it's a sort of license. Yeah, but then. If you can find a company that builds these things in a shed on the back of a farm somewhere in North London and brings them in on the back of a lorry and plonks them in the garden and it solves your brief, then why wouldn't you? You might help ask your architect to go, I'm interested in this, have a look at it, what do you think? Could it work? Guide me on what I need to do, foundations, who do I need to put into services, things like that. But does it come in off-site? And as a construction is a wider business, off-site construction has been a thing since I was at university. And for London-centric, off-site can work. It still has its foibles. But think about the tower blocks that go up in central London. They're not building windows on site. They're not even building wall panels. They're hoisting the facade, the front of the building, off the back of a lorry and sending it up 20 stories on a crane and plugging it in. It's been built in a warehouse somewhere else. It's been tested. It's had water thrown at it, wind thrown at it. Every element has been picked over. It's wrapped up in bubble wrap and it's stuck on the building.
Mm.
Yeah. So you can leave your architect. More often than not, though, you don't. Yeah. More often than not, you need to develop a set of drawings that all those other professions that are required to see a successful project through will interact with. So your structural engineers, your mechanical electrical consultant, your sustainability consultant, your landscape consultant, your interior designer, if that's the sort of thing you need on your project. Yeah. This fourth stage is when information comes from your architect that can go out to others that they can input on that then feedback. And an architect will, as I say, as a lead designer, would coordinate that process and make sure that everything's going in the right place.
Mm-hmm.
It's an iterative process, and admittedly, you know, not always, or not always, sometimes this is where the architect's vision can vary as another consultant throws in, oh, well, you know, that's a bit tricky, or can't do that for this reason. An architect has a very good, and should have a very good and broad overview of the whole thing, but knows where their talents lie and where their limits are.
Yeah.
And they should bring in the others to support the client in their project at that point. Yeah.
So we've got, to summarise, feasibility report.
Briefing and feasibility. We've done the concept. We've done the developed design. Maybe we've got planning permission. Maybe we're not waiting for planning permission. We're just getting on with it. We're now doing technical design. Yeah?
Yeah.
And technical design, again, briefing through your client, you'll be talking with your client about how this job is going to be what we call procured, i.e. how is it going to be built?
Yeah.
How much effort are we going to put in the drawings, or how much are we going to leave up to the builder? Yeah. Where are the critical points? What's the critical information that we need to get to someone who's building? What can we leave them to work it out? Yeah. For a domestic project, it might be really simple.
Yeah.
You know, it might be a set of simple plans, construction details that we know meet regulatory approval. This is where the regulatory stuff comes in, because if it's not correct on the drawings, it's never going to be correct on site. Yeah. So, but am I going to ask a client to pay me to draw every last element on a small house extension? They don't want to pay for my time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Nicest possible way. A good quality builder should know what they're doing. If they need me to help them, you might need a different builder.
And yeah. Then final stage, build it.
Yeah. And and bizarrely, at the moment, we're seeing a lot of work come in for helping people with the build bit. There's certainly for the domestic market, the market is busy. The good builders are busy. Mm. The less good builders are not as busy, and sometimes they're offered the cheaper price. Yeah. Does a client want the comfort of knowing that someone else is keeping an eye on things? And there are checks and balances in the process. Building regulations is a huge one. But do you want to know that as you come out the ground, for example, that it's going right? Okay. And you will call on all those talents, the structural engineer as well, architect. But your architect has that sort of broad overview. They have that coordination role. They might spot something not going quite right structurally or service-wise mm-hmm. before it's gone too far down the line that it becomes a serious problem.
So after kind of the process, and you kind of mentioned structural engineers and stuff, my question number three is, what is the difference between an architect and an engineer?
So an engineer designs, an architect designs, might think about the whole building. An engineer will think about the whole building, but in a very different manner. Yeah. An architect might be thinking about the look of a thing. And I'm sure an engineer would also be thinking about the look of the thing, but they're also most interested in, does it stand up? Or more importantly, does it fall down? Yeah. And that's what your structural engineer should do. In the traditional procurement process for a commercial or domestic building, an architect would put together design and an engineer would assist the architect and the builder, making sure it stands up and meets regulatory approval for those elements.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There are in the same way there's any number of sorts of architects or any number of sorts of engineers, there's the engineer that just slavishly follows the architect's plans and, you know, fits things in. Yeah, and that's okay. That works. There's the engineer that goes, I can do it this way, but I could do it this way. Yeah, or you've got a problem here, I need to change this.
Yeah.
And works iteratively. Those are the good ones. Those are the ones we like. Yeah. And then there's the engineering task where a good architect would say, you might need me to just pull all the threads together, but this is structural engineering. Yes. This is just to make it, to hold a thing up.
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't need us in terms of design here. The best design here is the structure that a structural engineer
could put
together.
So that was going to be my next question, was are there some projects where actually the engineer is the one almost designing the building, then you come in at the end and make it look fabulous?
Depends how many engineers are listening, doesn't it? Really?
I'm not sure. I'll have a podcast with them later.
I'm not sure. I'm sure there are. Yeah, but I think we're thinking more about projects that really just solve a purpose.
Let's say the Eiffel Tower. Is that an engineering project or is that a building?
I'll say that's a beautiful engineering project. Yeah.
Okay.
Engineers do beautiful things. There is an overlap here, but it depends on the client procurement process, yep. And depends on the wants and needs of the project. There's a beautiful viaduct in the south of France, Mirail Viaduct.
Yes,
you might know.
I do know that one.
That's an architect design viaduct, but it's a piece of pure engineering, isn't it?
Yeah.
But would it have looked like that if it was handed just to the engineers? Yeah. What role did the architect play in saying, I know what we could do, but can we not do this? Can we try and do that? I'm sure there are engineers out there that would do the same thing. But I wonder in that context whether it was that team.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe the architect...
To summarise, would it not come down to the architect's experience? So, for example, we've worked together for quite a long time. You're very experienced in what the engineers cannot do. You may even undertake some initial calculations of what you think can be done from a structural perspective. And then, sort of come back to Katrina's point, you're leading the design of the engineering. Obviously, the engineer will input whether you're right or wrong and change things, but you're leading that design. Whereas a more inexperienced architect will need the engineer to design the fabric of the frame first and then work around that.
Yes, but no. Okay. Whilst it's a collaborative process in delivering a building, there are clear and clean lines of division of responsibility. Yeah. Okay. I might do back of envelope calculations and rules of thumb. I will keep it to myself. Yes. Let's say we're doing a 5-story building. I will know roughly how I might want distribution of columns in the space. I will roughly know how thick I need a floor for it to stand up. Yeah, because I need to do that at that concept stage to prove to the client it fits. Mm-hmm. I need to do that at that developed design stage to be able to present something to the planning authority. Because there's no point in getting a planning permission for something you can't build. Yeah. Okay. An architect with experience or a well-trained architect will know some of the answers instinctively, mm-hmm. or through experience. Yeah. A client doesn't want to hear that after they get scored a planning permission, the engineer say to them, "I need to change it." Yeah. That's not good. Yeah. So that's where your architect having that big overview would pull in that experience into the project. But they do calculations. No, we would let the structural engineer then take that responsibility. That's what they're highly trained for, mm-hmm. and well paid for and thoroughly insured for, which is very important. Yeah.
So difference between architect and engineer, we've got what other areas of architecture are there? So you've mentioned kind of domestic and commercial. Is that what you specialize in? Are there specialists who only ever design bridges, only ever design towers?
I'm not sure only ever, because a practice would, apart from the larger portions of the market, like domestic properties, I'm not sure any architect would say I only ever do a thing.
Yeah.
And then you've got to think that, do we only ever do domestic? We do a lot of domestic, but do we only ever do? Well, everyone's different, so we're not stamping out. I mean, there's people that there's the volume house builders that might take a greenfield site out of town and stamp out the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
But then we were doing that 200 years ago in London. We were stamping out the same terraced house, yeah. And there possibly was no architect involved. There was an architect that did the original drawings, quite possibly, but they didn't draw every individual one. They went through it. So no, I'm not sure that any architect would say they only do a thing, but they might have specialisms. But you go through your career as an architect changing, yeah? Mm-hmm. So I came out of university a long time ago. I did theatres while. Yeah, I did theatres and I moved on to do shopping centres, including some big ones around here. Yeah, and I did that for a decade. And then we started doing housing. And we did a lot of large volume schemes housing, hundreds of units in a single development.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We always did the small domestic stuff. I've always done the small domestic stuff. Architects go through college having to pick up extra work, you draw your friend's house extension, that sort of stuff. You do people your favours. They're a really nice undercurrent in any practice's work, well, certainly in our practice work, because if we're doing the large volume stuff or the large commercial stuff, there is a drive, there's a different set of criteria. The projects can take years. I've got one project that I'm now in its 12th year.
Wow.
It's gone through a lot of iterations. I'm still there. Yeah. A domestic project might be over in 12 weeks, yeah? And you go through that whole gamut of experience and emotion with the client on a domestic process in a microcosm. So it's all the same things you get in a larger project, perhaps less complicated, but all squashed into a smaller package. And that's really exciting,
mm-hmm.
yeah? Because it's that, in the same way a client satisfaction. Let's go for satisfaction. You should get satisfaction out of your engagement with your architect and your design team. Yeah, if not, find another architect and design team. But the architect gets satisfaction out of a job well done.
Yeah,
Something that looks nice. Getting something a bit of your own into it. Everyone's got a personal thing they like to do. Yeah, persuading something that a thing can be done when they never thought it could be. That just enlivens our project or improves their life, yeah? Problem solving, it comes back to problem solving. That's all good fun. And those things are those domestic stuff, mm-hmm. Quick, bang, bang, bang. And it's really nice. So we always keep that undercurrent. We've got this overcurrent of bigger stuff that we go and we turn up with smart shirts on. This evening I might be stood talking to Mr. and Mrs. Smith in their back garden about the apple trees a bit close to the foundations and maybe the structural engineer wants it moved, that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Interesting thing to think about is the planning element here.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get involved and you're running the planning, so on a domestic domestic property, someone's going for a loft extension or a rear extension to the property, that's probably well within your control to do all the planning. When would someone bring a planning consultant involved and sort of you would work with a planning consultant rather than taking control yourself?
I think your architect, again, your architect should be wise enough to say at a point to a client, I think we need some additional consultation.
And when would that be?
It could be as early as initial meeting, yeah? If you turn around to me and say, hey, look, I want to build a hospital out here, I might go, okay, another planning consultant. We might need to bring in a bigger team immediately. Yeah. What can a planning consultant do for even on a domestic process? A planning consultant might know your local authority better than we do. Yes, they might know the people behind the names. They might know what other people are getting away with. Yeah. Do you remember I said mm-hmm. that planning policy is guidance, not a rule. Yes. So how that guidance can be bent. But then we know that as well. It's just I might see a domestic extension in London Borough Barnet one a month. Yes. A planning consultant might see one a week. Yeah. They won't be designing them, but they'll be inundated with that knowledge gained repetitively.
Presumably they'll be able to say kind of straight up whether, yes, you might have a chance of this or absolutely no way that's going to cause an issue, so let's think about that.
We might turn around and say, yeah, we know that, but we're ignoring you. We're going to do it anyhow, yeah? And there's no harm in asking.
Yeah.
As long as you've got time, there's no harm in asking, yeah? There's no harm in asking the planners, could I do this, even if other people haven't done it? Why not? Just ask,
mm-hmm.
yeah? For small domestic stuff, the planning... The press rails against the planning process, and I could too, yes? For a small domestic stuff, it is what it is, yeah? The days are gone when we can get free consultation out of local authority for, everything's charged for. But, you put a planning application for a domestic extension, even if you're pushing the boundaries, a good planning officer will ring you up and say, Mr. Mayfield, no, I don't think we can do this. Can you tweak it?
Yeah.
So we say to the client, well, there you go, we tried, let's tweak it. We tweak it, we get permission. Worst situation, they say, you're going to have to tweak it. You're going to have to tweak it so much I can't do anything with this one. Do you want to take it back? It's called a withdrawal. Take it back and come back with another one. You get a second go for free. Mm. Yeah? Do you know what I mean? You learn a lot in the process. Yeah. But again, if a good architect would advise a client whether they were pushing the boundaries too far, if the client says, I don't care, I'd like to see, and we do get this, yeah? I'll gamble, I'll take a risk.
Yeah.
10% chance is 10% chance with the going to. Sometimes a client needs to find out for themselves a thing cannot be approved. Yes?
Rather than being told, I guess they weren't really accepting no as an answer.
Because there always is my okay. The one we get quite often is, but my neighbour's got it. Yeah? Your neighbour's house is not yours. Your neighbour's situation is not yours. When did your neighbour build it? Yeah, what were the rules then? Rules change. Yeah, we get quite a lot of disappointment when we've had a rule change. And but down the, yeah, I know. And in that case, the regulatory authorities, whether it's building regulations or planning authority, their hands are tight. Mm-hmm. They can't approve it. Yeah, it's just unfortunate. Yeah.
So going on to question number four is going to be about sustainability, stuff like that. So question number four, what sustainable solutions do you incorporate into your designs?
Okay, so we talked about that process going through briefing and concept. We would always ask a client what their sustainability goals are at that stage. We'd encourage them to develop some sustainability goals at that mm-hmm. stage, even if they haven't even thought about it. Yeah, we could tell them the bare minimums, and then we'd encourage them to go a little bit further.
Yeah.
Sometimes those going a little bit further are quite interesting, so they add into the brief. Yeah, we'd reflect that in the concept and into the developed design. We'd integrate that. I've mentioned regulatory approvals and I've mentioned building regulations a couple of times in this conversation. Building regulations in terms of have just changed, and there's been a greater emphasis now on better energy efficiency, passive energy efficiency. So that's building correctly with good insulation performance and air tightness. There's no point in having a highly insulated building and all gaps under the doors and all the heat disappearing out. Yeah. As well as those active elements, you know, how efficient is the heating system gone in? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's a regulatory approval. Planners may ask you to go beyond that regulatory approval, and that might be a percentage better than a thing. Certainly when you build, that's quite normal. Yeah. But they must also ask you to meet certain other standards. And it very much depends on what you're building, what those standards are.
Yeah.
Yeah. A client may also have some of those high aspirations. And we did a house a couple of years ago in South London, which is supposed to use no energy. I'm careful to avoid this net zero thing, because that assumes that there's always some energy consumption in it. And this house doesn't generate any at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's because it's a conservation area. We weren't allowed to do the photovoltaics on the roof. Yeah, so it's a low carbon, not a no carbon. Yeah, but the intention is it never has to have the heating turned on.
Ah, yeah, great.
Summer,
well, very
winter.
Handy given so the latest things.
Yeah, so it benefits from solar thermal gain. Yeah, to heat the spaces, it's highly insulated. In the summer, like the summer we've just had, it's got techniques to manage that solar gain so it doesn't overheat. That's equally bad. And the idea is that you shouldn't have just the appliances in the space should do everything it needs. We actually, for a reason that wasn't great, but it turned out to be great, the client was worried about his electricity bills, so we actually put monitoring on all the electricity draw items. We thought it was an air system that was doing something wrong. It turned out they were leaving the oven on. or running the oven, running a very expensive, a high performance oven longer than we'd ever imagined. And we just watched the spikes. Yeah.
Yeah.
And as soon as the client knows, oh, that's fine then. You know, it's a set. No client wants to think that their building's hemorrhaging energy. Yeah. So do all the things you can. If they then choose to leave all the lights on, or have the oven on 6 hours a day. In that respect, of course, it was adding to the heating load, so that was quite good. You know, that's their decision, and they'll live with that, yeah.
And what kind of accreditations can you get for buildings? I know, obviously, standard buildings get EPC rated. Well, every building has an EPC rating?
Yes. So Even existing ones get given one or have to generate one. If you're in the rental market, I think you already have to be
minimum C by 2025.
Yeah, 2025 is minimum C.
Yeah.
We're already doing, we've got a number of landlords that we work with that are looking at their stock as they're looking at tenant change. We're assisting a builder going in, putting in those measures, this is insulation often.
Yeah.
Putting in those measures, insulation, air tightness, windows, doors, etc., such that they can achieve their C-band rating.
And other kind of more official accreditations?
So there's things right up, official accreditations.
LEED and BREEAM and how much they impact a build. Like, have you ever had a client where someone's gone, I want to get BREEAM Excellent.
I'm doing BREEAM Excellent on an office development in Knowltree at the moment.
And how would you approach that? How does that work when you're coming to design a building? If they've said that.
BREEAM is hugely wide ranging. Yeah. And you not only have to deal with the elements of building, but also the material use, how are you going to manage the build process? And it's a pick list. Yeah. You might not achieve a thing. And then achieve a thing over here. You have to score so many points to achieve a certain level. My experience is that design is highly important in terms of achieving this BREEAM Excellent we're doing in near Old Street. But maybe you can do it with just the engineering side of it. I don't know.
So for example, you can get some BREEAM points by having very very good heating, mechanical and heating elements of the structure. However, the units actually might be significant enough that they have to sit in a different location. And then you have to come back to the planning concept and design concept of, well, do these sit in this location? Have I got an issue with that? Maybe I can't pick up as many BREEAM points as I want to because I can't actually fit this into the building.
Yeah.
So you work closely with the sustainability advisors and those professionals to ensure that you're ticking all the boxes on everything.
Yeah, if you know that that's coming to get you, if that's part of the client's brief, then you'd have a sustainability advisor in very early on. You have a BREEAM assessor, mm-hmm. essentially. You'd have a member of the design team that is just wholly looking at that element of the works. I'm sorry, I generalised. I said it was a box ticking exercise. It's how you reach the tick in the box that's the design element. That's important. And we work closely with those consultants if they're required. On a domestic project, that's not likely to happen. But a client may ask, the local authority is unlikely to ask you, unlikely to get it from anybody outside the client design, greater design team. But someone might have an aspiration. Your architect will say, could we not do better?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? Okay. We say it to our clients all the time. Could we not do something else here? Could we not think about this being a better performance than just the bare minimum? But, you know, for a small domestic extension, I can understand if the response is, I'd love to, but, where we do get something through successfully is when a client can see the benefits. And in the last, 18 months, the benefits is in your pocket.
Yeah.
If the hierarchy of measures that we would take always start with those passive measures, the stuff that you never have to go back and do anything about. You don't have to get someone to maintain or fix or refurbish or refill or refuel. You know, it's those passive measures, and that's, you've got to look at it's saving over a decade maybe, yeah? But it's not going to be there for a decade. It's going to be there for two, three, four. It's going to be the next owners. You're going to be asked as you start selling your house. That EPC thing is highly important.
Yeah.
That's going to be first and foremost. Someone who's going to look at my drafted Victorian terrace is going to say, "Oh, Christ, that's going to be expensive to heat." Yeah, what can I do about this? Yeah, it doesn't mean my drafted Victorian terrace has to be a drafted Victorian terrace. I can fix that.
Yeah,
and that's where certainly now we're looking at a lot stronger. These sort of we do a lot of work with existing buildings. That's what a greater increase of focus, and the regulatory focus is moving that way as well. So
moving on to our final question.
Yes.
How did you get into architecture?
Oh, okay.
did you know you wanted to be an architect from when you were younger?
No,
No.
No. I always like building things. Yeah. If you've got kids that like Lego, they're halfway to an architect, perhaps. I always like drawing things. I liked things that move and did things. And then I had a dad who's an architect.
Runs in the family.
And I saw what he did. And he didn't bring work home, but you got to see that there was a drawing board and there was a ruler that slid up and down and did things. And you maybe did something for the garden. And it's a way that an architect does pictures that say so much. That's really interesting. The best thing I did is I went to work for an architect before I wanted to be an architect. Yeah, I knew what my dad did, but my dad did this thing over here. So at 14, I got a week's work experience. Everyone at 14 gets a week's work experience, even nowadays. I got work experience in an architect's office. Amazing. I met people that were only maybe 10 years older than me doing crazy stuff, or at least it looked crazy to me. Yeah. And they let me do some of it. Yeah. They probably balled it up and threw it in the bin later on, but I did some of it. And you just go, oh, this is quite interesting. It's a vocation, not a profession. Do you know what I mean? You've got to be interested. You're going to get... It's a long old slog through university.
Yes. Yeah, so... Okay.
There's many routes through it. The way I did it was, 7 years.
7 years. And you have to be, I guess, what qualifications do you need to have? I can't be an architect to build what you're building, but could I call myself an architect to put up my own shed that I've made?
Oh, okay. You'd have to write it with a very small A. Okay. To be called an architect, you have to have a qualification.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You cannot call yourself an architect and offer a service unless you're registered as an architect. Okay.
And that's through?
Through the ARB, Architects Registration Board, because you cannot be a registered architect unless you're qualified and you've demonstrated that qualification through your education. Yeah, you have to achieve a degree, a diploma, and a set of professional studies. You don't have to do them all in that order, and you might skip one. But ultimately, you've got to have done 2 years worth of professional experience before you can call yourself an architect. Mm-hmm. And you've got to stand up in front of a panel of peers to demonstrate that competency. Yeah. We put stuff up that people's lives depend on. It sounds dramatic, but your architect deals with your fire compartmentation. Yeah. It's how you get out in the event of an evacuation. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They might call on others, but it's so important. So no, an architect is someone who has all that training. Anyone else is not, they might be an architectural designer, they might be an architectural physician, you might have an architect small A. I might do my own architecture, yes, that's fine. But you couldn't be an architect.
Fine. And can I become an architect if I can't draw or do maths? I can do both.
Oh.
But, hypothetically speaking.
Can't draw is a tricky one. Can't push a pencil around a piece of paper. You could probably get away without. Yeah, and we still push pencils around a piece of paper because we're trying to explain a thing.
Yeah.
But where does most of our information come out nowadays? It comes out of a computer. Yeah. Okay. So pushing a mouse around. Can you get away with not knowing maths? Yes, you probably can because the computer does a certain amount of it. Will you have to learn? Yes. There's no avoiding it. Yeah. The maths will. Someone will ring you up as an architect and say, how many square meters, feet have I got here? You know, how many can I get? And the calculator has to come out. Yeah. But then if you're working in a big practice, perhaps there are other people that will do that for you. The big practices might support someone who is just purely design, just purely doing concept, exciting the client about a thing, and there's other teams that help deliver it. Our practice is you meet the same people throughout the process. You meet all the people throughout the process from inception to completion.
Yeah.
And so, yes, you probably could do without drawings and maths. It might be a struggle, but I bet you'd learn it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I bet you'd learn any bit of speech. You wouldn't need to have an A level in maths particularly. You just have a good working knowledge. Yeah.
And I've got my final question. Do you want
no,
to
No, that's
ask
good.
My final question is, what is your most favourite... What is the your favourite... I can't even get it out. Favourite most exciting? That's what I've written down. It's terrible. What's the most exciting project you've ever worked on?
Tricky. the last one.
The last one?
Yeah, because, as I said... Even with the small domestic stuff, there's always some excitement in it, yeah? So it's what I'm thinking about today, yeah? The most exciting thing... Sorry, this sounds like a cop-out, but it's true. I'm going to see a client after this, yeah? Their project has to be the most exciting thing for me, and it has to be, and it'll be my only focus, yeah? Yeah. And I can get really excited about them. If we get something, if we can get them enthused. It's really bizarre. I think I'm normal that we as a practice don't live on our last project that's done. We're looking to do the next one better. Yeah. I know that sounds like a pitch. Yeah. But it's what you do as an architect. We're continually improving our professional knowledge. We have to stay registered as an architect. Yeah. So every project should be better than the last one. And if it's better, it's got to be more exciting, hasn't it? Yeah, it's got to be more exciting. Yeah, can we run multiple projects at once? Yes, we can. Will I be excited about all of them? I always am. Yeah, and it's really good fun. And
okay, because I actually have one more. Question. What's your favourite building then? As in, not that you've worked on, that you've gone, wow, that really ticks all the boxes for me.
Oh,
structure, building, whatever.
Stuff I've okay, so it's really nice reading magazines and you see a lot of good stuff, but you don't get this, you don't get to touch them.
Yeah,
I did a French exchange when I was 12, and they took me to the Centre Pompidou in the middle of France, which I knew nothing about, and I wasn't an architect at this point, yeah. And it's some of my arguments a bit old hat now. Do you know it? It's the Inside Out one.
Yeah, yeah, in Paris. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Yeah. And they took me to see that, and that is just out of its world. So as the most exciting thing, that was one of those things that really excited me as a proto-architect. And I've taken my kids back to it, and my wife's an architect, and you still stand out, and it's what, 40-odd years old now? It stands like, yeah.
Let's throw that back on Katrina. What's your favourite?
Oh, God, my favourite.
Clearly not prepared for this.
Prepared for this question. I ask the questions on this podcast. What's your favourite? Well, I think my favourite building. God.
You maybe need to parcel it up because that's our favourite.
You can
have others. You can, because if you said what's your favourite house, you could probably think of a favourite house you've seen in a magazine or something like that. I mean, that Meow Viaduct.
That's stunning.
Amazing. Is it a building? Yes, it is. It's built, isn't it? It's absolutely, you know, just that's about environment and location and beautiful form. That's amazing.
Yeah. When I suppose as you start to understand buildings and the way that they work, like, I don't know, there was a building that for the Bloomberg building and the kind of detail within that and within the structure I thought was really cool, though visually... It isn't my favourite building. I think the way it builds and done like that is so exciting.
Do you know any clients who've got that sort of budget?
No.
We'd like to meet them. Yeah, we'd really like to meet them.
If they are listening, get in touch.
I suppose the politically correct answer is your favourite building should be the one that solves its problems or the brief the best.
Yeah.
Yeah. But sometimes you might want to bend that so it looks nice as well.
Yeah.
And that's very personal. And I think what we do really well as a practice is meeting what our clients expect in terms of what's appropriate, beautiful to them. Yeah. You can, question about architects that do a thing. You can go to certain architects' practices will give you a thing that looks like their practice style. And so long as you love that style, that's an amazing thing to do. You've got, you know, like buying a car, it's going to be that brand, it's going to have that sort of style. Great. Yeah. But it's not everyone's cup of tea, perhaps. Yeah, you want your project to be your project,
yeah,
and that's what your architect should deliver for you. So I might have I might like the Centre Pompidou, but I'm not going to try and paint your house.
Yeah,
and stick the services on the outside. I'll deliver what you want.
So before we wrap up, where can people find you?
Oh, okay. So we are Norton Mayfield Architects, Mayfield me, and we're based in London and Sheffield. With most of our work in London, most of our people in Sheffield. We are available online.
Yeah.
We're available on social media. We're available by phone. If you're looking for a project in anywhere in the country, and we, which county haven't we been in? I don't think there's many. Yeah. We do quite a lot in London. We do quite a lot in northeast England, South Yorkshire areas. You'll probably end up meeting me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or Alistair.
Lucky them.
Or Alistair, the director, or one of our senior architects. They're all great.
Perfect.
They'll all do a great job. But you're buying, if you work with us, you're working with a team.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you might see someone more often than not. You'll get, so as I said, I'm doing a survey on someone's house later on today. Yeah. Tomorrow I'll be back on the job down in Old Street, which is £4 million. Yeah. So, yeah. Look us up.
I'll put all the information in our show notes so people can get to you very
amazing.
Quickly. Thank you so much for
that's
joining
right.
us. It's been really, really fun.
Yeah, it was good.
I hope you've enjoyed it too.
Very much so. Thank you, Ben.
That's all right. Thank you.
Thank you.
I haven't stopped smiling. It's
so I love
back
that.
To your passion.
I love that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Thank you to all our listeners. I hope you enjoyed it. Don't forget to like, subscribe, share, comment, and I will see you next time. Bye.